Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Before they even started talking about him being dead, one of the things they said to me was, where would he go? Would he go? How would he go? And I said, well, you guys probably already know this, but the reason he moved from Eau Claire to Madison was because he sold an undercover cop a quarter ounce of magic mushroom. But somehow he decided that this had happened and he was leaving. And he came out to Madison and he lived under the radar for a long time, years. You know, it got to a point where he was ready to clean up his life. He went to school, got a degree in electrical something, technician or something. At that point, he told me he quit dealing. And I wholeheartedly believed him, mainly because he didn't spend money the same way he used to. He smoked a lot less marijuana. Definitely a very big change.
Is there anything looking back on it that like, you wish you had done differently?
I can't really say there is. I mean, I can't really say there is because for me, everything that I did in this investigation was done purely and simply to try to find my best friend.
I think that they know he's still alive and that he is actually just on the run.
Hello, and welcome to episode 49 of The Vanished. 27-year-old Amos Mortier was last seen in Madison, Wisconsin on November 8, 2004. His friends became worried when they didn't hear from Amos and went to his home to check on him. They discovered that both Amos and his dog Gnosis were missing and had left an eerie scene behind. Four of his friends would become suspects in his disappearance, but who really knows what happened to Amos? This is part one of Amos's story. This episode is part one of a three-part series exploring the bizarre disappearance of Amos Mortier. This is a very unusual case. Most of the cases that I have covered recently have had a lack of investigation, but that was not the case when Amos went missing. His disappearance was not only investigated by local law enforcement, but also state and federal officials. You could say that Amos got the red carpet treatment from law enforcement as far as missing persons cases go. His disappearance led to several of his friends receiving federal prison sentences. One of his friends was even charged and convicted twice for the same crime. The audio that you will hear in this episode is not perfect. It came from tapes. Remember those things? I felt that it was important to include the audio in this episode because you get to hear from the people closest to Amos and their suspicions of one another as events begin to unfold. Nathan has been covering this case since 2007. He has written several newspaper articles about it and has been working on a book and is currently co-producing a documentary about Amos. I contacted Nathan several months ago because I had been reading the articles that he had written about Amos. We got to talking about the case and he mentioned that he had a lot of interviews that he had recorded years ago, but that they were in a storage facility in New Mexico. So we put the project on hold for a bit so he could make the trip to New Mexico to get the tapes.
So I began working on a book about Amos Mortier's disappearance in October of 2007. After meeting with his mom, I was really surprised at how little information she had because investigators weren't communicating with her. She was essentially had been cut out of the loop when it came to any updates or debriefings about her son's disappearance. And then as I spoke to more of Amos's friends and even people who were sort of on the periphery of this investigation and learned about how they had been treated, I found it really abhorrent that our government, our law enforcement, would treat people in this situation in this way. And so over time, my role as a journalist kind of turned into one of an advocate in, you know, reporting on what was happening and documenting people's stories. A lot of these recordings were made on an old analog micro cassette recorder, which I don't even know you can buy micro cassettes anymore. The store I bought them at in Madison, I bought the going out of stock sale, the last of the inventory in, I think it was 2003, 2004. Most of these were recorded between late 2007 and 2011. For the last 3 or 4 years, they've sat in a garage in New Mexico. Went down there recently and got them. And over the last week and a half, I've spent a considerable amount of time digitizing nearly 60 hours worth of interviews that we then had to condense into the three episodes you're about to hear. Incidentally, the very first interview I did for the book back in 2007 was with a gentleman named Jacob Faulkner, who also happens to be the first interview you'll hear tonight.
Jacob Faulkner, who arguably knew Amos better than anyone, met the shy 27-year-old in 1996. Jacob was about 15 years old at the time, and Amos was around 21.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it was definitely 1996. I had actually moved out of my parents' house and started living with the guys that I met down State Street.
State Street is a pedestrian mall in downtown Madison where large groups of homeless punks, affluent suburban ravers, along with artists, musicians, and transients would peacefully assemble across from a popular convenience store called The Den at Concrete Park.
One day I came home, and Amos was on our couch, sleeping. This wasn't really too surprising, because my roommate had a lot of friends in and out, just hanging out, and he explained to me that this kid was from Eau Claire, and that he was going to be staying with us for a while, and I think he maybe stayed with us for like 2 weeks, and I really didn't even get to know him. He didn't speak very much. He didn't socialize at all. And that's one thing about Amos, is he's a very internal person on one hand. Once you get to know him, he's like extremely friendly. I mean, a very nice guy.
It was around this time that Amos crossed paths with Brent Delzer.
I met Amos in the beginning of 96, maybe. Yeah, it was 96. I met him in a house where pretty much everybody just collected. It was the corner of Gilman and Butler. Everybody just collected there. I knew a lot of people. I knew the people that actually lived there, and he just showed up. Oh, yeah, that was when he was moving down from Eau Claire. Like, he stayed at one place that was over by the, you know where the IHOP used to be on Bassett?
Yep.
Yeah, he lived, like, right behind there. We just hooked up. Like, he was cool right from the beginning.
Nathan wondered if it was at this apartment where Brent's life intersected with Jacob's.
No, actually, Jacob didn't hang out there. Like, I met Jacob, like, not through Amos. I met Jacob through another kid that hung out on State Street that Jacob was friends with. And then I was friends with him. And Jacob was really young at that time. Like, so we didn't really, you know, like, he was just kind of on the outskirts. And then as time went on, he proved himself to be a cooler and cooler kid, you know.
So was your first impression of him?
Amos?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Like, right from the beginning. Kid was down. Like, just awesome all around. Just want to be happy and live his life and fucking make other people happy. No sketchiness at all.
Amos had the uncanny ability to connect with just about anyone.
See, that's the funny thing, because it's like if you look at it on paper, like, we didn't really have that much in common. Just the fact that we love to interact with cool people. Like, and just realize that in terms of music, like, Amos realized it too. This is why I liked him, because he was into what he was into when I met him, but he didn't know the other things that were out there that he would be into. So like I say, there's one kind of music that you should like. It's called good. He thought the same thing, you know, like he could hear, I mean, both of us, like, you hear something cool, and it's cool. It doesn't matter what genre you want to label it into, like, it's cool. Like, that's why we got along. Like, he was into new shit, like, something new, something cool, something crazy. Like, I guess you'd say we endeared ourselves to each other right away. Fucking, like, then it was the way it was.
Brent and Jacob tell one of their favorite stories about Amos during this kind of transient period in downtown Madison, which, in the late 1990s, was more or less one big party.
You guys ever live together?
Yes, we did. Several times, actually. Yeah. Several times. We lived together at 321 Wisconsin. Like it's a three-bedroom place. And we got six people moving in. There was this couple, Autumn and Ross, and then there's Bonnie and I. Brandon lived there too. And then Amos moved in. And this is how Southwest Amos was.
He lived with a couple other guys, and Amos actually rented what I consider to be a closet.
You'd call it a closet. You couldn't call it. It's like Harry's fucking closet. Like, you'd call it a closet. Because you couldn't call it anything less, but it's big enough to put a bed in.
It was the tiniest room ever.
Then Amos just volunteered. I'll take this little fucking people under the stairs type of fucking hole.
And actually, it was like a segue between a stairway into another guy's room. So this guy had to tromp through Amos's room every time. And that was probably the first house that I actually really talked to Amos. That's actually probably when I first started hanging out with Amos on a regular basis. I probably was over at their house almost every day. It was an interesting mix of people through there. It was mostly, I want to say, raver kids. A lot of us were into going out to clubs. And I was actually underage, so most of the clubs that I got into were through the back door.
Many people would come and go from Amos's life, but his friendships with Brent and Jacob were indestructible. You could say they were more like family.
So rare. You know, it really is. It's so rare to have somebody like that. Like, just somebody that you just know. You're not out to fuck anyone over. You're not out for your own ends. You're just there to be cool. You're just there to be a friend.
Amos had a savage curiosity for most things. He loved the outdoors and would often go hiking and camping. He was passionate about eating locally grown organic food and was planning on going into organic farming himself. Amos also happened to be a talented DJ.
He was really into music. Like, I thought that he was doing some crazy stuff. Like, you know, just crazy stuff. Like, stuff that if it dropped around here at a party, would blow people's minds. Cool shit, you know?
Most people would listen to it and say, this is so abstract, I hardly even consider this music. And Amos had come to a point where he was agreeing so much with the style that he was really rejecting all these other music forms that he'd come to love and strictly working on this, which was really weird, you know, because a lot of times he would try to meld the sounds with this one. He liked using, you know, echo effects, which was really kind of low tech in a modern idea of music mixing.
Any place where there was a crazy forest that we could just frown through, that's what he loves.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's zocdoc.com/vanished. zocdoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. About 2.5 months before Amos vanished, he started renting a home on Lacey Road. Jacob explained why Amos decided to make this move.
Yeah, he only lived at Lacey for a year, less than a year. And I think the whole reason he moved out there is because I moved out to Oregon, or technically the town of Dunn, but just outside of Oregon, and I lived on a property which was 14 acres, and then it was 100 and some acres of nature preserve. And he came up to my house and he was like, I gotta live like this. He was so tired of living in town. You know, his land was too far away from Madison for him to actually live on and commute to Madison to work. So he was kind of like, you know, that really wasn't the answer. And he was like, 5 minutes from the edge of Madison and all this beauty, I gotta find a house out here. And of course, he ended up finding the house on Lacey Road, and it was a pretty nice house. I'd been over there numerous numbers of times for dinner. He didn't even tell me he moved there. Like, one day he's like, oh, you want to come over and have dinner? And I'm thinking he's still at, you know, some other place. And actually the weird thing is, you know, he'd been telling me he was staying with his mom for that whole summer. And I was like, all right, I kind of thought we were going over to Margie's house, which I'd met her once or twice, but never really hung out with her. So I was like, okay, we'll go to your mom's house. And then he drove there, and I was like, whoa, you got a new house.
Dirk is another person who was friends with Amos around the time that he went missing.
I knew him for about a year and a half. Amos and I had similar interests in, like, food and eating and gardening and stuff.
It is important to note that Amos was a very compartmentalized person. The people in his life all knew him a little bit differently from one another. Dirk told Nathan about the last time he saw Amos, which was 2 days before he went missing.
It's pretty much a regular day. We went to Spring Green, had a bite to eat. So it was the three of us and Gnosis. We just went for a hike. Really wasn't anything particularly memorable, although I've had to refer to that afternoon many times since.
Dirk explained why he started to feel like something was wrong.
And I was trying to call him. I found a French press, like pretty much a brand new unit at a thrift store. And Amos had just broken his coffee machine, or he had broken the pot, the glass. And so, you know, I found it. I was like, you know, calling him like, hey, man, you know, like, just found this. You know, want to bring it over or whatever. It was really innocuous, really mundane while I was trying to get in touch with him. And it's like, why wasn't he calling me back? So that's what kind of alerted me that something was rotten. Amos would have called me back, like, right away if he would have gotten that message. That's why by Friday, I was pretty much in a panic. I actually kind of got the ball rolling on that whole thing. So that, yeah, that weekend is that infamous weekend where Marty and I go into the house.
Dirk called another friend, Marty, to tell him his concerns about Amos.
I think a call from Dirk at about, I think, midnight or something like that, that Amos had contacted him for a few days. That by the time he got to my house, by the time we got out there, it was probably 2 in the morning.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we pull in the driveway, hair on the back of the neck stands up. I already felt like something was screwy. Pull in, see his car sitting there. All the lights are out, and it's 2 in the morning with his
Amos to go to bed that early. We were prepared to have to break into the house. Because, I mean, as soon as I got the phone call from Dirk, I just immediately, like, I had my hands full that night, too. I was, I met my ex-girlfriend for dinner. She was staying at my house that night. And, you know, I wouldn't normally, you know, walk out and just leave company. I felt serious. We came with, like, gloves. We came with a flashlight, I think. Something to smash a window if necessary.
Dirk and Marty told Nathan about what happened when they arrived at Amos's house.
We went to the front door, which we never use to get into the house, you know. Like, if we went over to see Marty or Amos, it was like the sliding glass door is on the back porch, you know.
We got out of the car, tried the front door first, which was locked. And as we're standing there at the front door, right after we knock,
we hear this, what sounds like a gunshot. Marty and I were like, oh my God.
From inside or outside?
We heard it kind of like in the back of the house, the other side of the house.
Oh, wow.
We went around the house, and I think one of us was even like, you know, don't shoot.
Basically like, don't shoot, we're not armed, you know, what the fuck, you know, because we were already totally on edge and shit.
And then I realized that I had taken my massage table out of the trunk of my car, and the thing had fallen down, and that's what had made the noise.
Yeah, the wind must have knocked it over or something. The crap out of me, man. I thought we were dead right there.
So, we're not even in the house, and we're already terrorized.
When they got inside the house, they found an eerie scene. They were greeted by the sound of a record spinning and a needle scratching. There was a half-rolled joint near the turntables. Amos and his dog Gnosis were both gone. They noticed the dog bowl was full of food. In the hallway, there was a step stool, a level, and a hammer. They went outside to check out his vehicles. There, they made some disturbing discoveries. They found Amos's brown Carhartt jacket, along with his backpack. Inside the backpack, they discovered his wallet, which held his driver's license and a $5 bill. They also found his iPod and a set of keys, which included his house key and his vehicle keys. Flipping through the pages of his school notebook, they discovered that the last class notes Amos took were from his November 8th botany lecture. It appeared that Amos had come home from school, fed his dog Gnosis, put on some music, went to hang pictures, and simply vanished. The two men were so spooked by this situation that they decided to get the heck out of there. They thought that maybe Amos had gone with a mutual friend to a concert. They waited for that friend to get back the next day and found out that Amos had not gone with him. They began calling around to all of Amos's friends, but no one knew where he was. No one had contact information for Amos's family, so they began looking for his mom, Margie.
Margie's telephone number, so we can at least ask her if she knows where Amos is. You know, at this point, you know, maybe he just left town, didn't tell anyone, and he's, you know, up north with his grandma and grandpa.
One way or another, somebody got a hold of, like, a grandmother that knew how to get a hold of Margie.
Margie explained how she came to learn that no one could locate Amos.
I got a call from my daughter, and she goes, hey, Mom, when's the last time you saw Amos? I said, well, Dominic called Grandma, and he said that Amos is missing. And missing, what do you mean? And she said, Dominic's trying to find out your number. I said, well, call Grandma back and give her my number, and then call Dominic back and give it to him.
Margie got this phone call around 9 p.m. on November 14th, 2004. Dominic was among several friends who were looking for Amos at this point. Margie got in contact with his friends, and they all agreed to meet at Amos's house the following morning at 9 a.m. Margie was afraid to drive there that night because she had trouble seeing at night and she was unfamiliar with the area. As you heard earlier, Amos had only lived at that house for about 2.5 months. She did, however, ask his friends to go back to the house and look around a little bit more. Dirk and Dominic searched outside with flashlights, calling for Amos across the swampy void. Inside, Brent, Marty, and another mutual friend searched Amos's entire house. While doing so, they rounded up what they felt could be incriminating items, such as mason jars with green leafy residue inside, Tupperware totes that smelled of marijuana, a couple glass pipes, and a sentry safe. All five men that were there that night agree that the safe was empty. Everyone, including Margie, believed that the items should be removed before the police were called in case Amos returned. The last thing that anyone wanted was for him to come back to a house full of police and potential criminal charges, yet everyone but Brent refused to take custody of any of these items. After Brent had taken the items to his car, they all gathered on Amos's porch. While smoking cigarettes, Brent disclosed that a guy named Big Jake owed Amos $90,000. Margie was up all night worrying about Amos. She ended up calling the police at 6 a.m. on November 15th to report Amos missing. No one realized it at the time, but by this point, Amos had been missing for a week. When Margie called the police that morning, they told her that they would go out to the house to check on Amos. They called her back and told her that they checked and no one was home. Margie arrived at Amos's house later that morning and ran out into the marsh calling for Amos. It dawned on her that the area surrounding his home was so vast that they would need more help looking for him. She ran back and asked the police to bring out dogs for the search. Since both Amos and his dog Gnosis were gone, she was assuming that something had happened to Amos while he was outside with Gnosis. In fact, that is what everyone seemed to be thinking. They felt all signs pointed to Amos being injured in the surrounding swamps or cornfields. A 2-mile search radius was set and cadaver dogs were brought in. As word spread that Amos was missing, more and more people showed up throughout the day to search. Dirk explained what he was feeling while searching the surrounding cornfields.
We were looking for a body in the cornfield. We're looking for his body. So what's the mood for most of us? It was pretty doom and gloom.
Brent expressed how he was feeling that day.
I guess when I found myself waist deep in swamp water in the middle of November is really when it started to sink in. But still, I mean, that's the weird thing about it. I'm in this swamp water and I'm thinking something really bad might have happened. But at the same time, it's like, there's always that in my head, like saying, what evidence is there here to tell me that something really bad happened? You know, that's what I can't get around. That's why it's so, you know, it's like a mind.
As the first day of searching drew to a close, the decision was made to allow Amos's friends to stay at his house for the night in the event that he came home. People had already been in and out of the house all day long. Margie and others had tidied up, did dishes, people used the bathroom, his computer, doing a thorough job at contaminating a potential crime scene. Dirk expressed his feelings about that decision.
So I think it was Monday night that we all stayed there, which, in retrospect, shouldn't have been done, shouldn't have been allowed, shouldn't have been suggested.
The situation took another of its many strange twists that night when Margie received a call on her cell phone from a woman named Destin Lane. Destin asked Margie for directions to Amos's house. Later that night, Destin arrived at the slumber party on Lacey Road. Initially, she was prevented from entering, but eventually she made her way inside. Dirk recalls seeing her.
When I first saw her come into the room, it was like, who's this? You know, what's her involvement in all this? How does she know any of this? I'd never met her. I don't think any of us had, except for Brett. So in retrospect, it's even more strange. It seemed like he was the only one that knew her. And so, you know, what does that mean?
Was she talkative? Was she, like, fishing for info?
Yeah, I think, really nosy. Really nosy, yeah.
You heard Dirk say that Destin appeared to know Brent, who was one of Amos's oldest friends. Dirk thought it was odd that only Brent knew her, and then he started to add up some other suspicious circumstances.
Well, I don't know who all thought something was off with Brent, but I know Marty and I were. From the beginning, he's making these really sketchy moves.
The day before, when Dirk and Marty had been trying to contact all of Amos's friends, Brent wasn't returning their phone calls. They felt like he appeared to know something was wrong before anyone else. Dirk recalled a statement that Brent made to him.
Yeah, I know. I've been so sick, worried sick about it that I've been vomiting.
When Marty and Dirk had not been able to get a hold of Brent, they enlisted the help of another friend who knew where Brent lived. Marty recalled how Brent behaved that evening.
It was hard to get him to get out that night to help us. He didn't really want to deal with it. He was really upset.
Dirk and Marty believed that Brent knew where Margie lived, so they wanted him to come along to help find her apartment. At first, he didn't want to go, but eventually went with them. Dirk was suspicious of Brent's behavior in the car.
Get in the car to go to Margie's apartment building to try and find her door, you know, her mailbox, so we can, you know, figure out which apartment she's in. And he's saying how he wants to go home and watch movies. What are you talking about, dude? Our good friend is missing, and you just want to flee.
Then there was this issue of the $90,000 that someone named Big Jake supposedly owed Amos. Dirk and Marty discuss their thoughts on that.
I think it was the night before the cops were involved. We're sitting there on the porch. Brent told us about this $90,000.
Definitely, like, fuck, dude, something's wrong. I don't know how wrong it is. I don't know where he fits into all this.
Although Dirk and Marty found all of these actions to be suspicious, they didn't want to alienate Brent.
We didn't push on him too hard, because if he was more involved in something we didn't know about, we wanted him to talk. So, yeah, that kind of activity is why, you know, I was suspicious. Or at least suspicious about his level of involvement and what could have happened to him. Not that I thought that he had something to do with his actual, you know, disappearance.
The combination of Brent's odd behavior and this mystery woman Destin appearing really amped up suspicions that night. Something occurred to Margie later on. She had an unlisted number, and if Amos's friends didn't even have her number, how in the world did Destin, this mystery woman, get her number? Brent reacted to the suspicions that others had about his behavior.
I got four guys showing up at my house, like, yeah, I was kind of wondering where he was, but, you know, the fact is this, anyone that thought that my demeanor was flippant or freaking nonchalant, they didn't know Amos, you know, they just didn't know Amos. And plus, people didn't seem to like that I wasn't really willing to give a play-by-play description of exactly fucking what Amos' fucking personal business was all about. That's his personal business. Like, you don't need to know that, you know? Like, if I'm not willing to give up that information to you, like, who are you, you know? Like, why do you need to know that?
Margie eventually learned about the $90,000 that Big Jake supposedly owed Amos. A couple women who were involved in the search for Amos approached Margie and said that Destin Lane had told them about Big Jake and the debt. The three of them approached Destin together. Margie's jaw dropped as she listened to Destin's tale about a man named Big Jake owing Amos that amount of money. Margie thought the story was crazy. Not only had Amos lived with her during the 8 months prior to his move to Lacey Road in order to save money, but also the tires on his two vehicles were worn down to the wires. In fact, Margie had just loaned Amos $1,200 less than 3 months earlier. The idea that Amos may have had a $90,000 stash of money seemed preposterous to her. Margie recalled Brent telling her about Destin pulling him aside at Amos's house.
And Brent told me, he pulled him aside and said, Big Jake is involved with this. You need to follow up on it. You need to take care of it.
Margie got more information from Destin about this debt. We will call this part of the story the suitcase story. If you have trouble understanding this audio clip, I will explain it further in a moment.
Big Jake owed Amos money. Big Jake pretended to get robbed and told Amos that the suitcase of pot had been stolen. But he said, I know Big Jake's involved. And I told Amos, Big Jake ripped you off, but he wouldn't believe me. I couldn't get him to believe me. I kept harping at him that if he'd gotten ripped off, they would have taken his sound equipment. They didn't take anything. All he reported was a leather jacket. He said, I got so mad because he wouldn't believe me that I went down to the police department and got a copy of the report and brought it to him and said, see, here, all he reported was a leather jacket. That's what she's telling to us. So she's really, like, animated about this.
So she's telling the story. Are you questioning her?
Okay, I'm a little freaked out. I'm freaked out because it's like, well, who are you in my mind? And Amos involved in this stuff is like insane. You know, he's like, his tires on his car have wires out of him. You know, I can't believe he's worked with me all summer. I'm open to believing, but it just sounds crazy. Like right away when she asked me for directions, and the next day she said she'd been up here several times and told me a story about it. That I picked up on right away. It's like, and that's when I started thinking, well, how'd she call me? I think she was questioning me, but I can't remember what else she said.
Amos had allegedly given Big Jake a suitcase containing $90,000 worth of marijuana to stash. Then, Big Jake was allegedly robbed of the marijuana. Destin said that she had tried to convince Amos that Big Jake had stolen the marijuana. There was a police report about the burglary that indicated that the burglarized house had lots of electronics, but the entire place had been ransacked, and the only thing missing was a leather coat, as far as the police knew. Destin claimed that she brought the report to Amos as proof that Big Jake had stolen from him, but Amos said that Big Jake was his friend and wouldn't have done that. Destin was very upset that Amos wouldn't listen to her. At this point, alarms are sounding in Margie's head. She remembered the call from Destin that first night where she asked for directions to the Lacey Road house, but later, Destin was telling stories about being at the same house on a prior occasion. It seems as though Destin was lying about something. Nathan asked Margie about that conversation, and Margie couldn't remember too many details, but she felt like Destin was fishing for information. At this point, things weren't looking great for Amos. Police learned that he hadn't used his debit card in a week, and that his cell phone hadn't been used either. While many believe that Amos was injured somewhere nearby because Gnosis was missing and his cars were still there, others, like his friend Keith Burney, wondered if he hadn't taken off somewhere, on a vacation perhaps.
Then the cop called and said, yeah, we'll be going to share a reference as a landlord for landlord reference. That's how I found out that they were there. And I still thought, you know, he could be anywhere. He could have left for a month to go somewhere. You know, it wasn't so unusual for me for him to disappear. He'd usually say, I'm going to be gone for a while, Keith, whatever, you know. But it wasn't so unusual for us not to talk for a couple months. And I went out and searched for a week in the mud and the corn.
This brings us to the end of episode 49 and part 1 of Amos's story. In part 2, you will see the investigation start to heat up as the prospect of finding Amos continues to worsen. I would like to thank everyone for listening, and a big thanks to Nathan for all the work that he put into this story. You will hear more from Nathan as he enters the story in part 2. If you'd like to contact me, my Twitter handle is @TheVanishPod. I have a Facebook page and a private discussion group. Nathan is in the group as well if you have any questions, but I believe your questions will begin to be answered as you hear more of this story. Keep an eye out for part 2 later this week.
It's been a tough week for family and friends with Amos Moore here. Last seen Monday, November 8th, when he was in class at Madison Area Technical College. When friends did not hear from Mortier, they went to his house where they say they found the front door unlocked along with both of his cars, and his wallet was there and appeared to be intact. The friends had seen T. vanish. Amos Mortier is still a missing person. As the third day of searching came to a close, his friends continued to be baffled by his disappearance. Thursday, the search added an element to its effort.
The airplane's got infrared on it and is able to see more detail from above ground and get a better view of the area where we're unable to search by hand or by foot.
But once again, they came up empty-handed. With the opening weekend of gun deer season, the Fitchburg Police Department is now asking hunters for help.
Yeah, we ruled out the fact that with hunting being statewide, but not necessarily just Dane County, in the immediate area, somebody could find something farther out in the state.
In the meantime, the Red Cross has set up shop to help feed the searchers and support his family.
We're doing some calls for her mother right now, helping her with some things, and just trying to make it a little bit easier for everybody.
Every day that I come to work, I'm hoping that's the day that we can find this gentleman, that he's safe and sound, and that we can have a successful, happy closure to what's happened here.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loureau, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.